This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In the Iraq War, everyone risks an ambush or an IED. Once you're outside the wire, a female soldier says in a new documentary film, the enemy doesn't care what gender you are. But sometimes American commanders want women soldiers very close to combat troops. Here, Sergeant Rainey Ruthig describes an operation in Anbar province in 2003 when she was part of a unit of female soldiers called Team Lioness.
They wouldn't let us in the house, so we ended up having to bust down the doors. We roll into the house, and we were at the last of what they called the stack. You know, men went in, secured the area. We came in behind them. We usually guarded the interpreter, because the interpreters over there weren't armed. The women and children are all in one room. The men are all in the other. The women and children, they were just panic-stricken because, you know, we were supposed to search them. And finally, Morgan and I took off our helmets. And once they saw we were females, they started trying to talk to us.
Because there's no front, because soldiers and Marines so often interact with civilian women and children, because insurgencies don't follow the traditions of warfare, female soldiers can find themselves in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the law that prohibits them from units that engage in direct ground combat, the infantry, artillery, and special ops, gets blurred in places like Ramadi. A new documentary film called Lioness describes what women soldiers actually do in Iraq and the effect it has on them. In a moment, we'll talk with two soldiers from Team Lioness and with one of the filmmakers. Later in the program, we want to hear your stories about the flood of 08. Calls later, but you can send us email now. The address is talk@npr.org. But first, Lioness. We'd like to hear from women who've served in the armed forces today, especially those who've done tours in Afghanistan and Iraq. Tell us your story. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we begin with Anastasia Breslow. She's a captain in the U.S. Army and served in the Lioness Combat Support Unit. She's with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Neil, thank you.
So what happens when the law that states no women are allowed in direct combat comes into contact with the reality of the war in Iraq?
I think we're a perfect example of what happens when you have a policy that doesn't work well with the ground war. We had a commander, Colonel Cabry, 1-5 Field Artillery, who was running into a problem where because of the cultural differences, women could not be searched by men. And they were hiding documents, and it was a very uncomfortable situation for them to deal with. And he talked to his good friend, Colonel Brinkley, who was our commander of the engineers, who had approximately 24 female in the unit. And they started brainstorming and decided, well, let me put out teams of women to go with you, and they will perform the searches. And the missions we went out on were not meant to be combat missions. They were knock and greets and house searches. But as we said earlier, the war finds you, and you know what started as a knock and greet could turn into a firefight.
And I want to introduce a second guest now, and that's Sergeant Rainey Ruthig. We heard you just a moment ago on that tape. Thanks very much for being with us. She's also here with us in Studio 3A.
Thank you for having us.
And it's interesting. Just after that clip we played, you say in the film, I felt like the Gestapo.
It's the first time we ever went out and to go out with the men, and it was with our own Army infantry. I think it was the 1-5 that we went with, and they didn't realize that we were females. It was another group of men, and I could sympathize with them. It was hard to see the terror in their eyes when they thought that we were busting into their house.
You were busting into their house.
Yes, sir.
If it was me, I would have felt the same way, he said.
Yeah, it was hard to see, and they calm down a lot once they do realize that you are a female.
And that is precisely the advantage that you present in that a Team Lioness would present in that circumstance.
Our commanders realized that they were losing a lot of intel and a lot of caches and such by not searching the females, not being able to.
Caches being the deposits of weapons that are hidden.
Weapons or even paperwork.
Mm-hmm. And Captain Breslow, let me ask you, in the film, the point is made that, the rules, the law passed by Congress is being bent. Commanders are forced to go into gray areas all the time just by the nature of the conflict in Iraq.
Yes, exactly. You have to adjust the situation, and I think in most cases it wouldn't have been necessary, but because of the cultural differences, they had to adjust. It was the only way to make sure that our soldiers were safe and to get the intelligence and also to secure the population and make sure that they were safe.
And nevertheless, these operations, well, you know, you're putting your troops into danger.
Yes.
And interestingly, in that clip we played just at the beginning of the show, you said that you couldn't believe you got caught in a firefight. Tell us about that, how that happened.
We were out on a cordon in search, and most of the lionesses were actually doing traffic control points at that time in case they ran across females that needed to be searched. The cordon in search, at the end of it, the speakers went off and they had called the local population to a jihad, and suddenly we were getting shot at and we were in the middle of a firefight.
And that's where the war finds you.
Exactly.
What was that experience like?
It was terrifying and surreal, and you realize how good your training is, and then you have to remind yourself that it's real bullets and not blanks because you're so comfortable with the noise and with what's happening, and you know who you're supposed to follow and what you're supposed to do, and you have to realize that you still have to be more careful because it's real. It's not training.
And you're firing back not at targets. You're firing back at real people.
Exactly.
And that has its effects, too.
It certainly does. Morgan couldn't be here with us, but she has had to deal with the after effects of that, the PTSD and the stress.
And now let me introduce Daria Summers. She's co-director of the documentary Lioness, and she's also with us here in Studio 3. Thanks very much for being with us.
Very nice to be here.
And I wanted to ask you, the film sets out, it's not a narrated film, which is one of its benefits, but anyway, it's though if you need a voiceover specialist, anyway, the film sets out in captions at the beginning to say we wanted to find out what women soldiers actually do in Iraq.
Yes, that was I co-directed the film with Meg McLagan. We made it together, and our goal was to really tell a story that really was emblematic of the changing role of women who are serving in this current conflict in the war in Iraq. And so we started out with that as our question, and we then found this story, and it really seems to symbolize this disconnect between what's necessary on the ground over in Iraq and sort of the extent to which the public understands what women are doing.
There's a fascinating moment in your film where I think during a reunion of Team Lioness, they're watching a History Channel documentary on the incident in which, I think, Rainey, that incident that you were involved with, where that takes place. And in fact, their role is not mentioned at all.
That's absolutely right. Their role isn't mentioned. And one of the exciting things for Meg and I as we made this film was when we really started to understand that we were sort of capturing sort of history that otherwise might have fallen through the cracks. It was, so in that sense, it was original history, and we did very careful research and worked with the women, but we really had to piece together the story.
We're talking with two of the members of Team Lioness, Captain Anastasia Breslow and Sergeant Rainey Ruthig, also with filmmaker Daria Summers. If you'd like to join us, we'd especially be interested to hear from women who've served in Iraq and Afghanistan today. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And let's start with Kay. Kay's with us from Bowling Green in Ohio.
Hi, Neil. I was just wondering if the women who find themselves in combat and in Iraq and Afghanistan, apparently quite often you do find yourself in combat, are you getting combat pay like the men do?
Why don't we take it as far up the chain of command as we can go, Captain?
Yes, we're getting the same combat pay that the men do.
Same combat pay as the men?
Yes, it's hazardous duty pay, hazardous fire pay, and the tax-free, so we get the same pay.
That's fabulous.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to Brian. Brian's with us from Fort Lauderdale in Florida.
Hello.
Go ahead, Brian.
Hello, Dale. Thank you for your show, and ladies, thank you for your service, first of all. I really appreciate it. My question is this. I hear a lot about...
Your line dropped there for a second, Brian. See if you could say that again.
Oh, I apologize. We hear a lot about post-traumatic stress syndrome in the men who return from wars. And my question, and I thought about this for a long time, do women suffer from it? And when they suffer from it, how is it different? Is it different?
I'm going to take your question, Brian, but I'm also going to hang up on you because the line is so bad. But thanks very much for the call. And Rainey, Morgan, you said, couldn't be here, but she suffered from the effects of what she experienced in Iraq?
Yes. I mean, women suffer just as men. I guess we talked about this earlier today, that a lot of the people in the military are a type A. You know, you don't let that kind of show. You know, so it's harder to... for a lot of people to come forward and say that they have problems and issues. And you'll see a lot of vets that get together and talk that everyone's having the same problems, but they won't come forward. Mm-hmm. So I think it's both male and female.
Daria?
And I think an important thing that we've discovered working with the Lioness in the telling of the story is that for some of the women who have come back and are suffering from PTSD, and when they go, in one case in particular, when she went to the VA to seek counseling, the counselors were all men, and the combat PTSD group was all men. And when now, because women are really more increasingly in the thick of it, but it's not necessarily recognized. So she was questioned where they said, "Did you really do that?" But women, are women really doing that? And so there was this disconnect, and that part of it was problematic.
Mm-hmm. And your film focuses not just on what the women actually do in Iraq, but what that does to them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Stay with us. That's Daria Summers. She's co-director of a new documentary called Lioness about women in direct combat warfare in Iraq. We're also talking with Sergeant Rainey Ruthig and Captain Anastasia Breslow, members of the Team Lioness, who are with us here in Studio 3A. Again, if we could hear from women today who've served in Iraq and Afghanistan, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking with two members of Team Lioness, the group of women who went to Iraq as mechanics, clerks, signal officers, and quickly found themselves in direct ground combat. During their tour, Daria Summers and her co-director followed the women with a camera and turned their stories into the documentary Lioness. You can find more information about the film and see photos of the women from Team Lioness at our website at npr.org. The film will also air nationally on PBS as part of the Independent Lens series. So, along with Daria Summers, two members of Team Lioness are Captain Anastasia Breslow and Rainey Ruthig, who's a sergeant in the Kansas National Guard. We'd like to hear from women in our audience who have served in the armed forces, especially those who've done tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. Tell us your story. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can send us your comments on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We're also encouraging those of you who are dealing with the flood situation in the Midwest to send us your stories now by email. We'll be taking calls on that later. Again, the email address is talk@npr.org. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Amanda. Amanda with us from Cleveland in Ohio.
Hi there. I first wanted to thank the team members for their service. As the daughter and sister of current naval officers, I understand your contributions are very important. But I also wanted to touch base with the filmmakers and thank them for keeping us so up to date on the minority populations that are taking part in this conflict. I think in past conflicts such as World War II, it took a long time for those contributions to come out, the contributions of the minority populations, such as the African-American troops. And I just wanted to thank you very much for bringing this to the forefront.
We could point out women are, in fact, the majority population, just a minority in the armed forces. But Daria?
Thank you very much. There are certainly, you know, one of the things that we found is that, you know, when you follow the story in the military right now, it's a real reflection of this country. And, you know, you know, people from every kind of background, and so it was, it's very easy to do something like this and get a real range of background.
I think that a lot of, when I'm a minority, I think that a lot of, I don't think a lot of people understand the amount of women that are actually seeing the combat because of the laws that have been passed. So minority meant those that were actually ending up in those situations. Mm. So that, I think, is very important to portray.
Right, and I think making the film was one of our goals is also to sort of represent this disconnect between the public understanding and the reality on the ground. So I do understand.
thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Amanda. Captain Breslow, have you been back to Iraq since 2003?
I have not. My husband is currently serving in Iraq.
And I wonder, based on his experience and from other people you talk to, has the situation changed much?
It's improved.
A lot?
He tells me how he's in southern Iraq, how the Iraqi army and the Iraqi highway patrol are taking over newer and longer stretches of road, and that the army doesn't need to patrol them, that they just go out and check them every once in a while, that they're taking back their country, and there is less and less for him to do, and he likes that. And he does more integration with the Iraqi army and the Iraqi highway patrol instead of doing the missions himself.
Rainey Ruthig, have you been back?
No, sir, I haven't.
And is your unit up for another deployment?
Well, there's always a deployment looming somewhere, but I talk a lot with the guys that have come back from the guard and everything, and we'll sit down, and my story's a lot different than what their story is now, and they said you were in a different era of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's right. Sure, 2003 seems a while ago at this point.
Only 5 short years, and the changes that have come through when we talk is a large amount.
Hmm. And I'll just add that the women were over there from, like, really 2003 through 2004.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Julie. Julie is calling us from an Air Force base in Germany.
Hi.
Hi.
I am a military spouse. My husband is stationed here in Germany. And I was calling to ask if the women are married with children, and if they've experienced criticism for going on deployments and performing their duties for the country.
Captain Breslow, I know you just said you were married.
I am married. I don't have children yet. We've been putting that off until we could be together. So deployments make it difficult.
Deployments make it difficult. What about you, Ruthie?
Actually, I got divorced while I was over in Iraq, and I have a beautiful 9-year-old daughter.
And it's interesting, Daria Summers, you show these soldiers as soldiers. You also are very careful to show them as women, too, as mothers and as daughters and as sisters.
Yes, that was very important to Meg and I to tell their stories and create a space for them and their lives so that we have some context for their what they've been asked to do in the service that they're giving and what they've had to, the lives they've kind of had to leave behind and then return home, because now we have mothers and daughters and sisters and women just returning home with and bringing the war back home with them. And so that's a turning point in the history of women in service.
And getting back to Julie's question, Rainey, were you criticized at all for going on deployment when you have a child?
Actually, most of the people in question is who watched her. And her father watched her, and he did a wonderful job. A man can raise a child just as well as a woman can.
Julie, how's it going for you?
Fine. My husband is home. He's not deployed at this time. And I just, as a military spouse, as a female, we receive a lot of support from other wives and the bases and the family support centers here. And I have friends who are active duty, and sometimes I just wonder about their husbands when they're left behind and if they're receiving everything that they need that we wives get.
Interesting. What would you say about that, Anastasia Breslow?
I think a lot of the men find it intimidating to participate in the family support groups because they're so women-dominated. But my husband went to a couple of them, and all the ladies adored him because he went to the massage class so that he could give me a massage when I got home. And, you know, he was one of the only people that dressed up when I got back, and he was in a suit. Everybody else was in T-shirt and jeans and had roses and everything. And I think he dealt with it very well, and the support system was there.
Julie, thanks very much. And we wish you and your husband the best of luck.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's see if we can get another caller in. And let's go to Kathy. Kathy with us from Sacramento.
Hi. My name's Kathy, and I actually served back in 1982 through 86. And I felt that at the time we were having difficult times receiving equal treatment in the field with our male colleagues. And so I'm wondering at this point how the females feel that they're treated by male colleagues in this situation.
Sergeant Ruthig?
Well, I'm a track mechanic, which is a heavily dominated male MOS or job, if you will.
Specialty, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's quite hard for a woman mechanic to step into that, I guess, the boys' playground. But I've turned a wrench and lift my fair share of tires and engine packs and earned the respect. And it's no different than when a male comes in. They're not going to let you change an engine if you don't know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Captain Breslin?
I haven't had any issues. As long as you're competent, they accept you. You know, the two people that I hung out with most when I was in Iraq were men. And, you know, those were the guys that if I had a bad day, I went and talked to them. And, you know, if we needed to unwind, we'd play volleyball or cards. So.
I would just add...
Daria Summers, go ahead.
No, that one of the wonderful things that Meg and I discovered in doing the film on these women on the Lioness was that these women are all really competent. They're very able, and so it was a real it really presents a narrative where the women are really able to do their jobs and do them quite well.
I think if I can also address that, when you came in, when they were experiencing the transition at that time, it was a lot harder for them to accept women in this role. And with the generation changing, the younger soldiers, you know, they know. They go to AIT and basic training with these women, so they're used to it.
And expect it.
Yes, absolutely. Because and since we're limited from the combat arms, you know, for the infantry and the field artillery, sometimes it's a little bit harder to integrate with us. But, you know, for our peers in signal and ordnance and all the support units, it's much easier.
Hmm. Kathy, thanks for a call.
Thank you. That's great to hear.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's go now to Helen. And Helen is calling us from Miami in Florida.
Yes. Good morning or afternoon. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you.
I have two daughters. One is coming back from Iraq in a couple months, and another one is getting deployed in December. As a parent, after listening to your program and to these women who are wonderful and they do a great job for us and for our nation, as a parent, what can I do? What kind of support can I give them? What kind of what can I do for them when they come back and they don't really want to talk? Because, like you said, most of them are type A. And in the case of my two daughters, both officers, one aviation and one transportation, are both type A.
Wow. Yes.
Could you please help me a little bit in understanding what should I do?
Well, we turn first to our type A sergeant here.
I guess what my parents did for me was I'm very lucky that my dad was in Vietnam and he understood what I went through and came back. And of course, when I came back, I was a good about 40 pounds lighter and really hungry. And my mom made all my meals and just sat down and told me, if you ever need to talk, I'm here for you.
Mm. And what would you say, Anastasia Breslin?
You definitely tell them that you're proud of them and that you appreciate everything that they've done. Don't do it too much. One of the lieutenants that was staying at my house, she just came back. She's like, my parents just keep telling me how proud they are. Mm-hmm. But definitely let them know that and just be there to listen and, you know, let them feel at home. Because that's what they want when they come back.
Yep, well, they want the comfort.
Thank you so very much. One is coming back, in, like I said, at the end of July. We're looking forward to her opinions and things and the wonderful job they do with the troops. And I just want to thank you all for everything. Thank you so much.
And Helen, thanks very much for calling, and we wish them both the best of luck.
God bless you. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to J.C. J.C. with us from Baton Rouge in Louisiana.
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
Sarge?
Yes.
You've been there, you did it. 9 years Army, 61 to 70. And if you ever hit Baton Rouge, Sergeant, I'll buy you a beer.
Thanks so much.
And you can bring the captain.
All right. If I have to.
Bye.
Thanks very much for the call, JC. We're talking with Anastasia Breslow, a captain in the Army, and with Rainey Ruthig, a sergeant in the Kansas National Guard. They both served in Iraq in 2003 in a unit called Team Lioness. Also with us is Daria Summers, who's co-director of a documentary about that unit and about what women do in Iraq and about what Iraq does to them. It's called Lioness, and it will be airing nationally on PBS as part of the Independent Eye series.
Independent Lens.
Independent Lens series. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email we have from April in Glenside, Pennsylvania. Thank you for your service. I'm an Air Force veteran myself, but have not seen combat. Since women are actually now serving in combat and doing so as soldiers and not just as women, are there any rumblings of the actual law regarding women in combat changing, or will the women in combat simply continue to be ignored by the current law? Well, I think you might have something to say about that, Captain Breslin.
Actually, I can't talk about policy. I'm still active duty.
So. You're still active duty.
Yes.
What about you, Sergeant?
I think the more it'll change, the more they realize that the need is there and the women are placed there. I guess I'm not too much of the woman's liver much, but, I mean, the woman has a job. She has to do it. It's, you know, no different than the mom cleaning up behind the kid. You know, mom spit. And so, you know, women has a resolution to stick with their job and get it done, and the law will change once they see and more women come back.
And what have you been doing here in Washington?
Actually, we went up to the Capitol, and I guess just kind of seeing around. It's great because it's my first time up in Washington, D.C. I've traveled in Germany, Iraq, Korea, so.
And I'll just add that we've been up on the Capitol actually talking to some of the leaders in Congress and talking about, you know, this disconnect, and it's very important to try to get women out of this gray zone of recognition.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Kamala. Kamala with us from Sikyerville or Slyker. Tell me where you're in New Jersey.
I'm in Sicklerville, New Jersey.
Sicklerville in New Jersey. Okay, go ahead, please.
Yes. Well, in 2005, I deployed with the National Guard unit. It was a finance unit to Bakuba, Iraq. And I was involved not in direct combat, but indirect combat, where a mortar just hit way too close for comfort, and one of my buddies was injured, had shrapnel. And as rattled as I was, you know, after the whole thing happened, I was actually able to bounce back from it. The very next day, it was business as usual. And I guess that's just where your good training kicks in. So I just wanted to hear from the two females who were actually involved in direct combat, you know, how resilient were you? Because I know it just sounds like I can assume that you two, you know, both were very resilient and, you know, just kept on with the mission. So I just wanted to hear your take on that.
Anastasia Breslin?
It was business as usual afterwards. You're surprised at how you react and that everything seems familiar. You know, the training prepared you for that. One of the disconnects that we did have, though, was with the combat training. We're not as well trained as the men when it comes to you know, knowing all of the different weapon systems and being integrated with the Marines who speak differently than we do. So one of the things that after our missions, we would AAR, and there were constant improvements on it. So it wasn't exactly business as usual because we were trying to adjust to this new mission.
And Rainey Ruthig?
I guess I don't really realize there was ever a difference. If you came back after the mission and everything, you were, I guess, more hyped up, more, I guess you could say you felt more alive when just it comes so close. And
it's a vivid experience, isn't it?
It is, and I guess I always have to curse at my S3 because he told me, you know, it might not bother you now. Just wait a few years down the road.
The operations officer, yeah. And Daria?
Well, I just wanted to, there's one character in our film who wasn't able to be here today. Her name is Shannon Morgan, and, you know, I think also what's clear is that for some of these women who have gone on repeated missions and found themselves in direct ground combat certainly more than once and many, many times, actually, that when they return, and this is true with Shannon's story, it really sets in. And so it may not be while you're still in Iraq. It may be when you come home, and it may not be the first month. It may be the third month. And so that's the time period when you really have to be more self-aware, and those around you should as well.
And Kamala, what about in your case? Has it ever come back in your dreams, perhaps? I think she's left us. Anyway, thank you very much for the call, and thank you all for being with us today. It's been a real experience. I've really much enjoyed it. Anastasia Breslow, a captain in the United States Army who served in Team Lioness in Iraq back in 2003. Also, Rainey Ruthig, a sergeant in the Kansas National Guard, also at that time a member of Team Lioness, and Daria Summers, co-director of the documentary Lioness, which will be broadcast nationally.
With Meg McLagan.
With Meg McLagan on PBS as part of the Independent Lens series. Thank you very much for being with us
today. Thank you very much, Neil.